I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 30th of September. If you look at six key metrics, real GDP per capita, healthy life expectancy, someone to count on, perceived freedom to make life choices, freedom from corruption, and generosity, then the happiest place to be in the whole wide world is Denmark. This is a very interesting study that's been done by the United Nations. In July of 2011, the UN General Assembly passed a historic resolution inviting member countries to measure the happiness of their people and to use that measurement to help guide their public policies. It was followed in April of 2012 by the first UN high-level meeting on happiness and well-being. And that's what we talk about this hour of our program. We'll have two guests with us, Tia Ghosh joining us the first part of the hour, staff writer for LiveScience.com, former Kaiser Health reporting intern at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She's worked for Wired, Scientific American, the Salinas Californian, Science News, and other publications. Later, a senior fellow of the Canadian Institute for Advanced Research and co-director of the program on social interactions, identity, and well-being. And he is one of the authors of this really lengthy, it's like a small book, report on happiness throughout the world. We'll be welcoming phone calls from you. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. You, of course, will want to know how happy we are in the United States. And perhaps you have some indication of how happy you are in the United States, or maybe you've lived elsewhere and you can say, oh, the quality of life was a whole lot better, I was happier there, or maybe not. And how much money you make does not necessarily, of course, equate to how happy you are. Tia, hello. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Isn't it interesting that you get this major UN report? You have this UN meeting on happiness and well-being all over the world. I just love the idea of doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's great. I think we've been tracking things like GDP for so long. And actually, what matters to me, I don't actually have any idea what the GDP of the U.S. is. I know what it feels like to be happy or not so happy day to day. And I think that's what most people feel in their daily lives.
Mm-hmm.
So. I think it's great that they're zeroing in on what really matters. So.
And I guess the report looked at personally how happy you are and then also how happy you are as a member of a society. So it looked at a couple elements of happiness.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's really in depth. I mean, it's based on a few quick questions, though. I mean, it's not like they're doing, you know, 6-hour interviews with people about their life history, but it is amazing that they're looking at so many different aspects of happiness. So
did you write about this? Did you write about this study? Did it pique your interest?
Yeah. It was definitely very interesting to me because, I mean, you know, we always have this idea that our happiness is affected by our environment, by the country we live in. And, of course, everyone's curious to see, you know, where does my country stack up in this hierarchy. So it was definitely very interesting. It was interesting to me also that, you know, the United States it's pretty highly ranked, but it's nowhere near, it seemed like Scandinavian countries were definitely overrepresented in the happiest countries. And, you know, there could be many reasons for that. So
Isn't that something? And they keep getting ranked in the top when it comes to providing health care for when it comes to having a child and the support you get from the state and being able to raise your child. The Netherlands, Sweden, and then Canada. What can you say when you hear me say those? What do they all have in common?
The things that affect you as an individual when it comes to happiness, they may not track with what causes happiness on a country level necessarily. So generosity might be great for both the individual level and a countrywide level, but, you know, GDP may not have any impact on you, you know,
right,
as an individual.
And the amount of corruption in your government might be significant, too, I would think, because we all have day-to-day dealings. They may not be direct, but to live in a country that has a very corrupt dictator or a political system that may lead to some kind of violence would be horrendous.
Yeah, and I think even if it's not violent, just the day-to-day friction in your everyday life, man, right. I have to pay this person, you know, to drive across the street. I have to pay someone to get a license instead of just testing out of the, you know, taking the test. I think all that stuff, it adds to sort of that negative sentiment you have about living in a specific country if it's got high corruption. So.
The other thing that was significant about the report is that mental illness is the single most important cause of unhappiness, and yet this is an issue that needs worldwide attention.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was really fascinating. I think we always have this idea in our head, like, oh, in the U.S., we're over-medicated, we make up all these, you know, potential illnesses, but actually what the study found is that the burden of mental health illness is very high around the globe, and you know, there's really very little in place in most countries to deal with it. And the other interesting thing I found in the study is that they said one of the most important things to sort of set the course of your mental health over life is in childhood, in your development. And yet I think that's just completely overlooked, is sort of how do we raise children to be more happy and to be more resilient in life, to be less prone to depression and anxiety. And I'm not sure we even have good answers for those things, but it seems like society should take a harder look at that question.
Mm-hmm. So. I'm wondering if there is, if you found this in the report, we'll ask the next guest about this, but I'm wondering if when you look at the top tiered countries, if there is really a significant amount of resources being put into mental health services.
You know, I mean, I'm not sure about that, but I would imagine that if they have comprehensive health care systems, that might be part and parcel of it, just that as mental health is part of your overall health, you can have access to those resources. And it might also be that, you know, when you're not facing unemployment or wondering where, you know, where you're going to live next, I mean, that reduces anxiety. And I think that that's another thing the report points out, is that there can be lots of causes for depression and anxiety. It might be due to unemployment or poverty, but you know, it can trickle down into this major unhappiness. So
I think about this all the time, not every day, but usually every other day. Isn't it something where you were born? It makes such a huge difference in your life. Here we are talking on the radio and, or, you know, it's interesting that we can be having this discussion, or we could be living in a third world country just trying to exist every day.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's kind of like your mind is blown by how much so much of your life is just determined by where you're from. There's very little, you know, it's like you feel like you're in control of your life, and to a certain extent you are, but, you know, 95% of it might have been dictated by the fact that you were born in one place versus another.
How true.
Crazy.
How true. So are you happy you're here? I mean, in the United States.
I'm definitely happy in the United States, but, you know, I've never tried living in Denmark. Maybe I'd be converted, who knows.
She's on her way. Yeah, it would be fun to spend a portion of your life in all these different places. There's no doubt about that. Tia, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Tia Ghosh, staff writer for LiveScience.com. And we are going to continue our conversation. We'll speak with one of the authors of the report. John Helliwell is from the Vancouver School of Economics at the University of British Columbia. The report has been written by a group of independent experts who are acting in their own personal capacities. John is one of them, Jeffrey Sachs, director of the Earth Institute at Columbia University, and also the director of the Well-Being Program Center for Economic Performance at the London School of Economics. Those three have put together this entire report that, as I said, is fairly lengthy. It looks at beneficial consequences of well-being. It looks at our values, too, which I think is a really interesting part of the report, that maybe we need to return to some of the ancient insights of Buddha, Aristotle, and others, that our values and character are major determinants of our happiness with life as a whole. It certainly isn't how much money you make, although if you're having a hard time making any money, then of course it's tied directly to your happiness. And we'll welcome your phone calls as well. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. How happy are you? Do you equate your individual happiness with the country in which you live when you think about other countries where people are happier? Are you surprised to hear that it's Denmark, Norway, Switzerland, the Netherlands, Sweden, and Canada, with the United States being bested by Mexico, Panama, and the United Arab Emirates? We'll take phone calls and continue our conversation in a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Joining us now is one of the authors of the report that we've been talking about. He's with the Vancouver School of Economics at the University of British Columbia, John Helliwell. And Professor, thank you very much for being with us. Hello.
Nice to be with you.
Yeah, I found the report absolutely fascinating. And isn't it a great thing on which to write a report? We don't normally think about people like you and all your collaborators centering so much attention, and the UN, on happiness in a country.
It's a wonderful change, is it not?
Yes, it is a wonderful thing. It is indeed. And I'm wondering if you've seen any signs. I know the report just came out. But do you see policymakers using well-being and happiness as a goal for formulating policy?
Well, it tends to hit individuals, community leaders, and sometimes national governments and their departments. There are several countries that have made explicit efforts in this direction, the United Arab Emirates being one, and France being another, and the United Kingdom being another. South Korea also has changed the way it approaches policies. Gradually, as the OECD has come out with a report for national statistical offices so they can start measuring these things, that's all part of the change, of course. You have to build up the data so you can build up the science, and you have to build up the science before you can expect people to make their policies any differently.
Why are so many of the countries that are in the top tier here from the same part of the world, Scandinavian countries, Denmark, Norway, the Netherlands, Sweden?
Well, we this time, the first report, we just gave the rankings and did some of the underlying research. This time, we've tried to explain why the top countries are top and the bottom countries are bottom. So we have a framework that uses six factors to explain the differences, and it turns out it explains about three-quarters of them. And the top countries turn out to be top on all, not in the very top five in all of them, but very high in all of these six variables. It's worth going through them. And especially if you then compare to the United States, you can see how they're above the United States. The six factors are GDP per capita, and that's the one the U.S. leads most of the other top countries. And the next one is healthy life expectancy, where they would all lead the United States. A third is, do you have someone to count on in times of trouble? And all the top countries rank very high on that. The U.S. ranks high, too, but not as high. Another is perceived absence of corruption in business and government. And the U.S. ranks below the top countries
really?
In all of that.
Really?
It's obviously doesn't relate to what goes on in your post office. I think it probably is in part because it's changed in the last 5 years in the United States. It's probably some of the outflow of the financial crisis that people just are not as secure in their views of either the lawmakers or in the financial institutions as they were.
Mm-hmm.
Another, we've got income and we've got health, we've got someone to count on, we've got corruption. Then there are two other important ones. One is generosity. How frequently do people help other people in financial terms in your country, adjusted for income level? The United States ranks pretty high on that one, almost at the top. And finally, a sense of freedom. Do you have a sense of freedom to make your key life decisions? And the U.S. would rank well below the top countries in that measure.
Really? Let's talk about that a little more. Freedom to make what kinds of decisions?
Well, it's an interesting question. It says your key life choices.
Huh.
And, of course, the countries that rank right up at the top of that are in the top six. They're the Netherlands and Denmark and Norway, and it's seems to be composed of those countries where one way and another one way and another, everybody ends up when they're young being equipped with the education and health and opportunities that all doors are open to them. So they tend to have pretty flat structures. I was in Denmark last week talking about this, and to them, the whole idea of distance between top and bottom of the bosses and the workers or the principals and the students is very flat. And that's the kind of environment when everybody feels that the doors are open to them. Nobody's stopping them getting along.
That certainly isn't the case in the United States right now, where we've seen inequality just keep going, getting larger and larger and larger and larger.
Yes, and that is a big difference, which obviously plays into the feelings of well-being of all but those at the very top.
Well, you're there in one of the most beautiful parts of the world, Vancouver, and Canada ranks. We tend to ignore Canada, I think, in the States, and you're doing just fine, thank you, aren't you?
Well, it depends how who we think our peers are. If you look at the scores, both on the six variables, if you look at the scores in the six variables, the U.S. is 20% richer than Canada, and that's worth about 0.05 on the 10-point scale. But all the other five factors, Canada is ahead of the U.S. by more than 0.05, so overall it's almost a half-point difference between the two countries. And lest Canadians get boastful, which is not the way they like to think of themselves,
they can always
look at the top five countries, which on average do better. We're sort of about a fifth of the way from the top three countries to the United States. So we're closer to Scandinavia than we are to Wisconsin. Wisconsin, of course, may be closer to Scandinavia than it is to the rest of the country.
You also, and I think that this is interesting, I'd like more explanation, you say that Caribbean countries and Latin American countries have, on the whole, done much better than they had in the past for the last 5 years. What are they doing?
Well, there is an increased perceived sense of freedom on average in those countries. Corruption is seen as less of a problem than it was. Their economic growth is relatively higher than the rest of the world. They've been less affected by the crisis. It's also true in the Latin American countries, and this explains why Mexico is ahead of the United States in these rankings, even though on most of the variables the United States ranks higher. Latin Americans in general have about a half point extra boost. They're just happier than other people, even other people who live in the same living circumstances. So there's some magic in the streets there that perhaps we have something to learn from.
That's great. Some magic in the streets. We welcome phone calls. We have many of them that have come in, so let's go to them. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. John Helliwell is our guest. He is joining us from one of the most beautiful parts of the world, and evidently it's pretty happy, too, and that's Vancouver. He is senior fellow of the Canadian Institute for Advanced Research and co-director of their program on social interactions, identity, and well-being, professor emeritus of economics at the University of British Columbia. Let's go to phone calls, starting with Scott in La Crosse. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
I'm pretty happy, and congratulations to the Canadian gentleman there. He must really be thrilled. I was talking to KP when I called in. About having, at one point in my life, traveled quite a bit. You know, I was in Peace Corps and all that, but I have traveled to Western Europe. And I came to the conclusion that one thing about that part of the world that seemed pretty evident to me was that they greatly benefited by having lots of neighbors. In other words, if you're, let's say, living in the Netherlands, and you see them doing something really smart in Denmark, you're going to say, you know, why aren't we doing that? Whereas here, you know, so many of us are so insulated and, you know, don't go anywhere and are just of the opinion that it must be best here because we're doing it here. And if we're doing it, it must be the best, right? And I'm not sure if more people didn't, if we had more neighbors, in other words, if we, maybe more of us live closer to that Canadian border and could look across the across at what our friends to the north are doing, maybe we would be thinking, you know, we could do some of that.
Well, maybe maybe those Canadians just need to be more boastful, Scott.
Yeah, I think they probably benefit a lot from that, living below the radar, frankly.
Right. I'm with you. Professor Helliwell.
The idea of small countries benefiting from having more open doors and open eyes is, I think, a very good one. I think that's just the way they think of themselves. I was in a wonderful Danish care home last week because it's decided its objective is to make lives happy for the people who work there and live there. And they have no uniforms, and they have people doing things when they want to, and they're always going out on expeditions. It was quite an incredible thing. One of the nice things about it was they had just the day before had a bunch of Norwegians in to look it over because they wanted to copy what they were doing there. Their people lived happier and longer lives, and the Norwegians said, hey, that's pretty good, let's copy it. So I think that's an example of what your caller was thinking about. Although they're already doing things pretty well, they always realize there are good examples elsewhere they can follow.
Thank you, Scott, so much for your call. Sandy in Algoma, hello.
Hi, Kathleen. Hi, John. You know what? I'm from Algoma. We're up near the lake. It's a beautiful area, but I'll tell you what, we have a lot of unhappy people up there, and it's because we're having a huge war with these factory farms. These guys are trying to pretty much poison us off the face of the earth, and they're contaminating our water. They're wanting to start aerial spraying of liquid manure. That's next on the agenda. So we've got people, neighbors that are pitting against neighbors because of this. They have no respect for the earth or their neighbors. We're very unhappy with that.
I don't know much about your local scene, but we do know an awful lot that people get unhappy really fast when life doesn't work for them in their local neighborhood and their local towns. You know, for all this talk about nations and so on, it's really close to home where people really are enmeshed in the community. And if that's not going well, then they can be really unhappy.
Hmm. And what about...
But of course, at the community level, I'm not saying the factory farms are the easiest place to start, but because it is closer to home, sometimes you can get together with your neighbors in the community and say, hey, this is not right, and feel you have some capacity to do something about it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Sandy, very much for the call. I'm wondering, let's talk about government for a moment and the impact they may have on our day-to-day lives. You're aware, I'm sure, that tonight the government of the United States may be shut down, mostly because of political divisions that just keep getting carried out and carried out and carried out. Does all of that have an impact on daily lives, do you think, of Americans, or is that fairly far removed from our happiness?
Well, a lot of things that governments do play right into your happiness, so that if you're feeling secure about the quality and nature of your education system, the quality and nature of your health care, then that gives you a sense of security. Trust is enormously important to people's happiness. They want to be able to trust their neighbors. They want to be able to trust the police. They want to be able to trust their administrators. And they get a pride when they do, and a sense of assurance. So governments are not the whole story by any means, but they're part of it. And I think it's probably true that people think of their governments as reflections of themselves. And if the governments are not something they're proud of, then they're a little less proud of themselves.
Mm-hmm. Matt in Wausau. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I looked through the list of countries that were ahead of the U.S., and I think without exception, I'm not sure of all of them, they have some form of universal health care that they offer to their citizens. And I'm just curious how much, you know, as we worry about health and if we get sick in the U.S., you know, bankruptcy is an ever-prevailing option for you. I'm just wondering, how did you look at that relationship?
What, that is not in the kind of data we can get for 150 countries, but we have done some study of that using the Gallup poll, daily poll in the U.S., which has now millions of respondents. And we did find that people who had health insurance and hence felt they were covered against bad things, independent of their income, were much happier than those who didn't, which suggests that it is an important factor, as you suggest.
You also, though, and I want to spend some time on this, you in the report say about 10% of the world's population suffers from clinical depression or crippling anxiety disorders, the single cause, largest cause of disability and absenteeism, with huge costs in terms of misery and economic waste. Only a third of those who need it are in treatment. But the happiness factor would go way up if this were addressed. Why isn't it? And can you point to examples where it is? Maybe it's Denmark again. I don't know.
Well, there are. I mean, the Danes worry a little bit about it. They say, how could we be top in the happiness when there are so many people getting treatment for depression, including pills, in Denmark? Mm. And, of course, Richard Layard, who was the author of that chapter on mental health, would say, as you suggest, that it is a good thing that people are being treated in Denmark, because in other countries they're not being treated. I tend to rethink mental health even more than Richard does, and say, if we really took people's happiness seriously for more of their lives, then you'd find many fewer people ever getting into a situation where their mental health would get into a state that required treatment.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Matt, so much for your call. Our lines are have been very busy. You could get through right now, 800-486-8655. We're talking about the Worldwide Happiness Report 2013 this hour of the program. And our guest is Professor John Helliwell. He's Senior Fellow of the Canadian Institute for Advanced Research, co-director of their program on social interactions, identity, and well-being, a professor emeritus of economics at the University of British Columbia, and he is one of the authors of this very detailed and extremely interesting report. Clyde in Hurley is next. Hi, Clyde.
Good afternoon, Kathleen and John. I would like to know a couple of things here. If things are so great in those countries, how come their population growth in the last 100, 200 years has not grown hardly at all? That's number one. Number two, cradle to grave, they care of you. What percentage of the income is paid directly to taxes? How many, what percentage? And then also, I remember a guy in 1950, he was a geologist from the United States, went to Sweden, and he was a degree in geology. And he says, you know, Chubb, he says, the guy next to me, he was a ditch digger, and he lived the same as I did. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Clyde, for your call. John?
It is true that, as I mentioned earlier, the gap between top and bottom in incomes and in opportunities in those countries is very much less. And that's treated. I was talking to the Business Summit in Copenhagen, and these were all the CEOs, and they liked the idea that their incomes didn't exceed those on the shop floor by anything like as much as they do in either the United Kingdom or the United States. It gave them a feeling that they were all part of the same team working on the same job, and it didn't really matter whether you were digging the ditches or solving the equations. You were doing your bit. On population growth, there's not any link that we've been able to find between population growth and happiness. It is true. For example, we looked at migration among the U.S. states, and there was some tendency for people to move from the less happy to the happier states. There's a little indication in the international migration data that people do consider not just whether they can get a job, but what kind of a place it is to work there. The third point was about taxes. It's one of the intriguing things in those countries is that people don't talk very much about it. So if you ask the average Dane how much of their income went in taxes, they probably wouldn't know. The top countries, of course, include some countries with quite high tax rates, like the Netherlands, and some countries like Switzerland with very low tax rates. So you've got big governments and small governments all right up there at the top. And the secret is they're all getting the governments they want. So in Switzerland, it's small government and distributed government. In some of the others, then they have more centralized. But in all cases, they have a high enough level of trust that people are perfectly happy to have their elder care facilities run by the government or indeed run by private groups. They just want to make sure they're well run and at some place that they would want to go to when the time came.
Thank you, Clyde, so much for the call. Mark in Fort Atkinson sends us this email. I was born in Ireland in the early 60s. Most people around me seemed warm and generous and happy, even though Ireland was a pretty poor country and was dealing with the troubles. When my wife and I visited family there a few years ago, I found that many people were not too happy with the economic situation since the downturn. The boom years had brought prosperity, but it was fragile. He's interested in knowing how the rankings have changed over time in relation to economic forces, especially for Ireland?
Oh, nice question. We had a special section in Chapter 2 of the report looking at the worst-hit Eurozone countries in the financial crisis. They were Greece, Italy, Spain, and Portugal, all of whom went down two-thirds of a point on a 10-point scale. So that's equivalent to a trebling of income or a one-third, two-thirds drop in income. It was even more drop in happiness than could be explained by unemployment and income and all these other factors. And their society essentially was becoming unraveled. At the other end, you had two countries, Ireland and Iceland, whose subjective well-being went down hardly at all, although both of them were very badly hit by the, not so much the Eurozone crisis as the banking crisis. They were in it up to their necks. They happen to be the two countries right at the top of the international league table for social connections, for having someone to count on in times of trouble. Mm-hmm. Your caller mentioned that, and it seems that having that kind of social connection, even when they get into a crisis like they've been through, somehow they manage to work together to deal with it without it taking them down in the dumps and losing their connection with each other that happens in the countries with what Bob Putnam calls lower levels of social capital. Mm,
yeah, that connection is so important in life, isn't it? It's just so important. I'm wondering if it ties it all, too. I found this chapter really interesting where the report called perhaps for a return to the ancient insights of Buddha, Aristotle, and others that an individual's values and character are major determinants of the individual's happiness with life as a whole. We don't stress that a whole lot here.
I think individuals probably do. I think it's probably primary of people's satisfaction with their life as a whole, that they do the right thing. Mm. Now, what the right thing is tends to depend on who they value, who are the people they're trying to emulate. And you can find erosion of those values. And I think in Jeffrey Sachs in that chapter is pointing at materialism as having led people down a false path for quite a long time. He's saying, let's go back to the more fundamental personal values, and therein people will find happier lives.
More phone calls in a moment. Here's our number, 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we are talking about the World Happiness Report for 2013. The UN General Assembly passed a resolution in 2011 inviting member countries to measure the happiness of their people and to use this report to help guide their public policies. So they looked at the metrics that we have discussed, how they determine whether or not people in a country are happy. And we're talking about that with one of the authors of the report, who also happens to live in one of the happiest places in the world, which is Canada. Denmark, the happiest, followed by Norway, Switzerland, the Netherlands, Sweden, and Canada. U.S. is bested by Mexico, Panama, and the United Arab Emirates were 17th on the list. John is a co-director of the program at the Canadian Institute for Advanced Research on Social Interactions, Identity, and Well-Being, and he's a professor Emeritus of Economics at the University of British Columbia. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Back to phone calls. Natasha in Madison. Hi.
Hi. I'm calling because I've lived in five European countries and now the U.S. And I don't know where some of these countries rank. For example, France and Germany or Belgium, but I personally find it a lot easier to be happy there because of what the countries, as you put it, the government has to offer. People have talked about health care. I can talk about child care, maternity leave, things like that, that make it really a lot easier to have a sane life.
France and Germany tend to be around the same level as the United States and sometimes a little bit below. They have happier and less happier parts of their population. In Germany, of course, it's brought down in part that they're still trying to amalgamate the former East Germany with what was West Germany, and that's still got lots of pressures involved. And in France also, there are a lot of internal population and other pressures that are probably bringing them down a certain amount. But as you go from country to country, as you have, you'll always find, if your eyes are open, things that cast a light in your create a light in your own eyes of something. It wouldn't it be nice if we could do something like that? But you'll also find, too, things that it's nice to come home to.
Right. Thanks, Natasha. Tim in Fairchild. Hello.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to make a comment. I've listened to this before, but at one time I had the opportunity to travel to Europe and Scandinavian countries on business. Hello, are you there?
Oh, we're here. Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, I was in Norway and some of the other countries over there. And I was importing some products from Norway. But what impressed me was the fact that at noon lunch, all employees, the factory workers, whatever, were brown bagging it with a sack lunch. And the CEOs and engineers and top guys would come down and sit at like a wooden picnic table and have lunch with employees. And the ratio, I think, of what the top management made and what the employees made was such a much smaller ratio than what we have in this country. You know, the employees just felt like they were just part of the company instead of being isolated.
I think that's important. What do you say to that, John?
Oh, there's no question that it's that kind of contact that builds trust. And it also creates more fun, too. And you, both the workers and the managers go home at the end of the day happier about it than if they'd been living in a more authoritarian structure. So that and people who've operated in that kind of regime have told me that the best solutions to long-standing problems were developed around the coffee table. And if around that coffee table you have people who are seeing the thing from all different specialties and all different levels, then you can bet your boots it's more likely to be the right answer.
Right. Thanks, Tim. A couple emails coming in. Susan from Cottage Grove asks, how does socialism, religiosity, and climate, how do they show up as common factors, or maybe they don't, in happy countries?
We find on climate or at least weather, a tiny bit of effect on mood, very little effect on these life evaluations we're talking about. As you noted, a lot of the countries at the top, in fact, are not the countries with the climates you want to live in during the winter. They're often pretty difficult climates. In fact, there's some theory that says that having these difficult climates is part of what brings people together, because they have to work together if they're to deal with the problems. On the what was the third point?
Religion.
Religion. Some studies have shown that people, especially, it's really the kind of groups you have and what they mean to you. Especially if you share values with people, then you'll find that you get happiness around it. Bob Putnam has found that the extra happiness of those who go to church is really driven from their church friends with whom they share values. And so that tells you something, just like with that company example. If people share values and get a chance to work together, then they're likely to be happy. And churches are one of those places where these kind of magic occasions happen.
Yeah, true. All right, Jim in Milwaukee. Hi. Jim? I don't know where you went, Jim, but I'm sorry. Jim, oh, here's another Jim in Milwaukee. I don't know if you're one and the same or what. Jim, hello.
Okay, is that me?
That's you.
Yeah. Okay. I'm wondering if there's any distinctive trends within the, say, top 10 or 15 countries based on cultural and racial differences. You know, since you have the upper European countries up there, which are not racially diverse, is that a distinctive feature in this happiness group?
We've done some, the Gallup data don't tell us very much about that. We do track migrants and people who are born in the country, and people tend to bring a little bit of happiness where they come from and to adapt to the situation where they are. There's some evidence that migrants are less happy when they move than moving itself is a problem. And the problem is usually that the kind of networks that support happiness, they're based on trust, they're based on continuing contacts, and especially if people come with different cultural values, it then takes a while to feel at home, to really feel that you belong to the new community. And by the same token, from the people who've been long-standing members of the community, when new people come in, especially in large numbers in urban environments, it takes a while to break down those feelings of strangeness. And for both the newcomers and the people there a long time to feel at home. So that there are these trends from big migrations. We do know, however, there are countries like Canada with very large immigrant populations that it is possible for people from very, very different backgrounds to learn to live and work together happily. But it takes some time and it takes some thought.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jim. Mary Madison, hi.
Hello. I think that with the environment, fewer people, a low birth rate would be beneficial as far as air, water, and soil is concerned.
John?
It is true that the kind of pressures that people put on the environment are less if there are fewer people. It's also true that most of the supports of happiness are non-material in nature, so that as people start to think about well-being and happiness terms, then it's easier for them to rejig their lives and make decisions that use less goods and services and hence do put less pressure on the environment. It's also possible that people trying to do the right thing are increasingly going to have values for the future that help them to move in the same direction.
Thanks, Mary. Deborah in Milwaukee. Hello.
Hi. You know, I started making a list, and I made the kids list, and I put down for unhappiness, kids list. small electronic devices, large electronic devices. But so I think, you know, it takes time for happiness, a sense of what makes you happy. You have to, like, learn about it. But I've seen poverty from traveling to other countries, so I know we have it good here, and that keeps me grounded. But I think I'm having a happy childhood, and I did have one. I didn't know it then. I grew up following my dad and my mom and sister camping and hunting, watching my dad fly fish in the UP, and that is the groundwork for a happy future.
Did you look at childhoods, John?
There is a whole other, the mental health chapter showed that the mental health of the children within the context of their family when they were young was an enormously strong predictor of their future mental health. And I'm sure it's just as true for the positive side of the equation, happiness, that's where the foundation of security and connection and the willingness to trust and reach out is established within a happy family. So absolutely, I agree.
Yes. So you must be pretty happy in British Columbia.
Well, I have to report that if you look at happiness by province in Canada, it starts at its peak in Newfoundland
really?
In the far Atlantic and goes steadily down, not
no.
by far, steadily down as you come west. And we've put all the data together and tried to explain it, and it turns out to be explained by the kinds of variables we use. That in Newfoundland, anyone who comes to town, they're immediately taken in, and they're everyone's friend. You come into a busy modern city like Vancouver, and people are living in this beautiful environment, but they're too busy looking after their own problems to welcome the newcomers in a way that makes them really feel at home. So time spent with family and friends, for example, is much more in Atlantic Canada than in British Columbia. One of the things we have to learn as we start to focus more on happiness is how to make life in the busy, large cities more like the life in relaxed, small towns, because those are all sources of happiness.
Well, thank you so much for doing this study. It was just such a wonderful conversation and something that people haven't paid much attention to, and I'm glad you have. Thanks, John.
My pleasure, and happy lives to you all.
Thank you. Happy trails to you. Our guest this portion of the show, John Helliwell, he is professor emeritus at the University of British Columbia in economics. Thanks to K.P. Whaley and Rhonda Fanning, who produced this program, and happiness to all of you.